decisions and meetings, nothing to correct it. So we're going straight into the business portion of our comments in Kusatu. Welcome again. I was part of you this morning. We just left the comments in room. If over to Honorable Kareem to take us through the PIC bill, Section 75 bill. It's a committee bill. That's why the chairperson of the Standing Committee of Finance is coming to take us through the content of the bill. And I refer members to page 6 of the bill. That is the memorandum that explains to you the content to make it easier to follow. Honorable Kareem.
Now, just to say, I'm here with the legal team. Norbert Underwood is the drafter of this bill, and Frank, who we also have a colleague here who's new, but I think she would have been ahead and taken her from here. They will primarily be here because of the norm, which is somebody from the committee person who chairs the committee, but they will deal with the process of the bill. So, to explain in a nutshell, we began to pick up allegations about wrongdoing within the PIC around November 2016. And that's the end. February 2015.
Are you a journalist? Oh, right. So, not that it matters. But I'm just interested. I haven't seen you in the parliamentary press gallery. So we began to get worried, and at the same time the DA's Mr. Mania was picking up information. Sometimes you could see from the way he spoke in the committee, it seemed to be the same people sometimes that were sharing information with him and with us. And what grew to be some mutterings became a crescendo. And the committee couldn't fold its arms and do nothing. So we hauled the PIC before us several times. In fact, I think in the year 2017, we had the PIC before us more than any other public entity in our portfolio. Maybe 6 times or something over a year. And we couldn't get clear answers. In other words, the answers that were given were credible. But were they true? We couldn't tell. We couldn't prove. And the people who were passing on information to us as the ANC mainly, but also to Mr. Mania, some of them at least, they were scared and they were not prepared to come forward. They feared for their jobs. And in fact, some of them presumably are before the PIC Commission at the moment. In about mid-2017 or thereabouts, when the PIC offered a loan to SAA to rescue it for a while, I think it was SAA, it was the Eskom, I can't recall. The PSA in particular, but also COSATU, was up in arms. They said that's workers' money. It should not be invested in what they saw as irretrievably collapsing state-owned companies. They support state-owned companies in COSATU's case. They feel it's important to development a role, but it shouldn't be at the expense of their workers' pension funds. And for a variety of their own reasons, both the PSA and COSATU appeared at some hearing in the second half of 2017, and PSA said, we want to withdraw. We want to get out. We don't want the PEC to do anything for us. We want to remove our stuff from the GEPF if need be, and so on. So they were up in arms. COSATU wasn't taking that position, but said no. They want union representation. They want to be on the boards, and so on. So, because of all the noise, and because we as a committee couldn't prove anything, but yet there were so many things in the public domain, and so many things whispered in our ears, we decided that we would craft a bill. Interestingly, I thought we should approach Treasury to craft a bill, because they have more resources. But a certain ex-deputy minister, who now travels the world over, ostensibly because he's a minister of tourism, was then a backbencher, and he said, no, you do a bill committee, because it'll take too long from the executive side. And they were not seeming to us at least as paying enough attention. And it was a very difficult time, comrades, we can't just erase the past. There were tensions within the ANC. There were claims about the Gupta family and so on. There were even claims that the Guptas were trying to appropriate the PIC. So it was a very difficult, tense climate. We were also leading up to the 2017 Nazareth conference. Study groups were divided. So one could write 4 or 5 books when one's 120 about this, right? So it was a very difficult period to maneuver, but finally we got agreement that we must have a committee bill. Now, of course, to get a committee bill through, the process is a bit complex. You have to first go to the House to get a motion of approval or desirability, call it that. But as a private member, doesn't have to do that. So we passed a resolution on the 18th of October 2017. By December, Mr. Mania from the DA got a private member's bill drafted, I think, via Nolotando. In December, he told us about it and forwarded it to Kosatu and others. And I think in January the following year, it was tabled. Now, we were a bit taken aback because the very ideas that we'd put in the resolution and discussed were now substantially in the DA bill. And we had agreed that we would go to Parliament, and Mr. Jacobs explained to us, you have to get this motion through the House or resolution. But we were busy then with the medium-term budget policy statement and finalizing bills. And so for us, as a chair and a whip, it was very difficult to do it. So finally, Frank got it through. And Mr. Mania kindly agreed that we look at both bills together. So we have two bills. We had two bills before the National Assembly Committee. One is a private member's bill, and the other is a committee bill. There were overlaps, but also substantial differences. So essentially, what does the bill say? It's there in our report to Parliament. You can presumably distribute that because it sets it out in a narrative. But in the memorandum of understanding, you'll also see it. Basically, we tried to create a system where, or at least a model, which is ensuring that the PIC is accountable to the Parliament. Actually, there's no provision in the law until then, if I'm correct, Nolotando, for the direct accounting in law. Accounting to Parliament was more in terms of norms and traditions and, you know, procedure. Now we put it in the law. Because, you see, comrades, colleagues, if the government employees lose out in terms of what they're entitled to in terms of their pensions because the PIC invests badly or some other wrongdoing, it's the national fiscus. It's us as Parliament that will have to rescue them. Interestingly, unlike our own pensions, if our asset manager, my brother, loses the money, the government's not going to come to our rescue. But if it happens to the workers in the public sector, the government, as stressed as it is, budget-wise, we'll have to come to the rescue. So what we said is, look, if the government will finally have to pay out through the fiscus, Parliament has a vested interest. This is not an ordinary SOE. Here it's compulsory. So we then decided that we will provide for the minister to subject regulations dealing with the PIC to Parliament. That's a normal thing. We ask that any deviations from the PFMA must be subject to scrutiny by Parliament. We asked, the DA claims, they asked, it doesn't really matter. Both of us wanted this. Declare all investments, listed and unlisted. And in your report, set it out. Because there were claims that in the unlisted investments, there was a lot of skullduggery and wrongdoing. Interestingly, when Deputy Minister Jonas allowed for it to happen the first year, I think the members of the opposition were taken aback as to how active and effective they were in ensuring triple B double E. So they were investing in the right way. But obviously there wasn't all that information. Mr. Mania, and we encouraged that, by the way, Mr. Mania and Mr. Lees were taken to a meeting with PIC and the Deputy Minister Jonas and Sean. And after that, it became a norm, but then it stopped happening in the last financial year, and we all asked why. So basically, our bill does the following. One, its overall intent is to ensure openness and transparency, and most importantly, accountability, for the reason I explained. There are arguments from the executive that it's legislative overreach. Well, firstly, the requirements there are pretty, most of them are pretty ordinary. Deviation of the PFMA, it's an executive bill that Parliament amended and adopted on the matter of regulations. That's a norm. Ministers generally do it. On the matter of unlisted and so on, well, we did it already in Jonas's time. So what's the big deal? We don't understand what's that mean to me. Secondly, we said, let's, the unions have representation. So in terms of the bill, 10 non-executive members. It will be 3 unionists, 2 from the largest trade union in effect, and 1 from the slightly smaller union or cluster of unions. We said that the minister must delegate the deputy minister of finance to chair it, as has been the norm since, I think, Jabu Molaketi's time. And if, for some or other reason, the deputy minister is not appropriate, let's say, for example, the deputy minister had taken a loan from a company that he was a shareholder of, or she was a shareholder of, and then he's in the PIC, there'll always be suspicions, you know. Or what if the company, the person was a shareholder in, the DM, he's withdrawn from the company, but then it gets a loan on legitimate grounds from the PIC. So then the deputy minister who chairs the board of the PIC should come from the economic cluster, but in consultation with cabinet. So you don't find a minister who doesn't like the nose of the deputy minister saying, ah, I'm not going to make him or her the chairperson. So if you're not doing the DM of finance, you're not allocating the DM of finance as the minister to that role, then it has to be a DM in the economic cluster, right? Now, there have been a lot of criticisms of that, especially from the opposition parties, but the PIC senior officials also have reservations. The reason we did that is because, anyway, it's been the norm. Secondly, the defined pension benefit means it's the fiscus, ultimately. Thirdly, if you're having union representatives, you think if you have a bureaucrat there, he's going to be, or she's going to be able to manage the trade union movement. You've got to have somebody who's got political gravitas. Otherwise, the workers also, they're not angelic. If they were, in my view, the world revolution would have taken place 50 years ago, right? So they're quite capable of wrongdoing through the investment companies and all, and we know that. So that's the fourth point that counterbalances the deputy minister being there. Is actually Parliament's going to haul the PIC to account like never before. So they are counterbalanced. See, my friend, my chair, co-chairperson, they are counterbalanced. There are 4 points about why we want the DM of finance, preferably, but any other DM in the economic cluster. Then what else did we do? Initially, we had like a list of investment criteria. And by the way, it's part of the course. The PIC, when they appear before our committee, says they do all those things. They say we invest in a way that gets benefits for our members and beneficiaries, but, our depositors, but we also seek to transform the economy, invest in infrastructure, create jobs. That's what they say to us. So it's astonishing they had problems with it. Finally, we struck a compromise because the DA was making a lot of noise and so on. You can't prescribe to asset managers. And Cossato got annoyed with us and so on and so on. They thought maybe we're selling out. And finally, we felt both sides will be selling out. That means we struck a decent compromise. It's a very good criteria. So, what have we got then? We don't have any criteria, but we have a list of guidelines. And we start by saying that depositors, meaning the GEPF, provides, and U.S. provides the mandate. Okay? And whatever investments, Nolotando, it must benefit the beneficiaries, right? You drafted all that. And then we said, in so doing, they must take into account, as far as possible, the following, and we listed them, guidelines, right? But the point is, colleagues, now they have the depositors shaping the mandate, but it must also take account of the guidelines, and not criteria in the way we had it originally. Then there's nothing much particularly else that I want to draw attention to. The team from the legal services unit might want to. But an issue arose. There is now a PIC commission looming. Should we not wait for it? Mr. Mania's view at that stage was no. The committee's view was no. What we're going to do is, initially you'll recall, Comrade Charles, that they were going to have a commission. It was going to report, I think, in the middle of November, and the final report was going to be middle of February. Am I right? Right? But it took the president, understandably, 3 months to do the commission's terms of reference and appoint it, right? So we had many discussions. We've had 4 or 5 intermittently, sometimes for 2 minutes, sometimes for 25 minutes. Do we postpone our bill. When it emerged that the PIC Commission, the Party Commission, will only report on the 15th of April after Parliament's risen, Mr. Mania, from what I can remember, maybe I'm a bit blurred about it, also thought we should go ahead with the bill, but he wanted his bill, obviously. We said, no, fine. I think both sides felt we should do the bill. So in the first instance, we want to stress, we have the highest regard, as I said in the House, for the Impartee Commission. It's an illustrious judge. It's a very astute team with Jill Marcus, the former Reserve Bank Governor. And I think the incoming committee, ourselves as the outgoing committee, we look forward to their report. The aim of this bill is not to undermine the work of the commission. Thirdly, even if we didn't vote on the bill that we have before your committee now, the same issues would have arisen, let's say in October, when the commission's report was processed by the cabinet and the minister brought a bill. COSATU will come and say they want union representation. PSA will say we're fed up, we want our money out. Individual stakeholders will say, do something, protect us. Individual pensioners. The PIC will say, we're doing fine. We've got a commission now, we restructured and leave us alone. The depositor will say, no, we alone must decide. And there's union representation. There's the same issues are going to arise. So we said, we've put a lot of work into this bill, on and offline. Meaning, yes, on odd occasion, once at least, twice I think I met the team, and then over the phone, engaging with party structures. Now, if you hide, we're answerable to our party structures, but they don't dictate to us. They listen to what we say. And 90% of the time, they agree with what we say. They don't know the nitty-gritty. So we discussed, and I engaged privately with people who were at loggerheads with each other. They phoned me and lobbied me, and I'm sure they did with Tandy and others. So we did a lot of work. And the feeling we had was, the new committee is going to start from scratch. If the ANC is anything to go by, hardly anybody from the current committee will be in this committee. If they back, there will be some other committee. When we started in 2014, there was Dees van Rooyen, and from the DA, I think there was one person, Dion George, who was from the previous era. But now, side ANC, there's only one person. So we said, it's going to be a long haul, they're going to take very long to do this stuff, and so on. So the bill's going to lapse. We've done all this work. You can't consult the public constantly and say, no, I'm not doing the bill. The PIC Commission will present to the minister some recommendations to the president, they will come with a bill. The same issues are going to arise. We also think we acquired a lot of experience and expertise. So we see this as an interim bill. That's what we try to negotiate with Minister Imbuweni. And we are going to write from the NA side to Lex and Party to tell him how much we think the work they're doing is excellent and that the incoming committee looks forward to the bill. But we'll set out the reasons why we went ahead. Now the Party Commission did write to the Minister to ask if anything can be done to stop the processing of our bill after we voted on it in the House and the committee. Not being a lawyer, but being clear, I've been long enough in Parliament to have understood the legal issues. I pointed out to the powers that be, which is much the same I think Advocate Jenkins did to his powers that be, but look, firstly, a commission is an executive structure, not a parliamentary structure. It answers to the executive, unless it's a parliamentary commission. Right, Molotando? Right? Sometimes we appoint commissions. Secondly, as I know democracies, a commission can make 10 recommendations. A government can say, we reject all 10, we accept 5, or we accept all 10. So what happens to the commission's work first has to be processed by the executive, and they will bring us a bill. That bill will only come, given the process of Parliament, the new MPs will come in end of May. Budgets will be looked at, as happened in 2014. You're only going to look at bills towards the August-September period. So that's too long a gap. What happens between now and then, given all the work we did and the public hearings? But our view is that, look, there are many, many reasons why we had almost no choice. And I'm not going to spell them all out. I will draft a letter and send it. If the NCOP decides you want to write to Lex and Party the judge, we can do that. But, we raised the issue also with the chief whip on our side that if the commission stops the process, it's setting a precedent. If this commission can say to a parliament, don't pass the law in the house that you passed in the committee, moreover. And even with the senators before, actually a commission is dictating to parliament. It's a judge, but it's an executive instrument. We can't do that. It will set a precedent. And we don't know to what extent the minister will agree. So we can anticipate they're not likely to agree with a DM being their chair. Fine. Let the future decide. Let the next parliament decide. For now, this is where we are. Secondly, when we say that COSATU and NEHAHU and whatever TSA must have representation, we're not implying that Matthew Parks here or Tony Ehrenreich should be there, unless they have the expertise. The board members have to have the necessary expertise for asset management. But they can choose their own representatives to the Public Service Bargaining Council. That's the point. So I think Advocate Jenkins can speak on why it's inappropriate and non-returnable for a commission's request in that circumstance to be adhered to. It will set a precedent. There may be other reasons why the NCOP might choose another route from the NA, but you can't do it because of the commission. But out of respect for the commission and the judge and the team, we should, I think, well, we are writing as the NA, we might want to consider that. Maybe we do a joint letter, but that's good. So we value the commission, we're very keenly observing it every day we are, on TV and through the print. And when I get time myself, I'm sure others will, I'm sure Shah will, we will YouTube and follow everything, yeah? So basically, that's where we are. It's an interim bill is what we presented to the House. I called it a transitional bill, but more reflection, maybe interim bill is better. Because transition implies that it's the basis on which the next amendments will be treated. But interim makes people calmer, like my friend, you know, who means well. She's sitting very quietly there, goopy. She'll feel calmer. The officials feel calmer. If you say transitional, but it means something different from an interim bill. So after having used the word transitional in Parliament, it struck me, no, man. I wanted to stand up and say, Chairperson of the House, can I withdraw what I said and make it interim? But ultimately, I don't think we should be apologetic about this bill. It would be foolhardy, in my view, foolish actually, after all that hard work and all the public hearings, to just dump the bill. But Parliament is in your hands. It's your call. Nothing stops us in law, Advocate Jenkins and other town will explain, to proceed with the bill, and one should be wary about precedent. Some of us, many of us may not be here, but we shouldn't set precedents for, you know, the new, younger MPs that are coming in from outside the MP side. So there we are. We spent many hours on that bill. Our report will tell you a number of days, but it doesn't tell you a number of hours outside meetings. Thank you. I'll take questions. I have to be out of here in 20 minutes. For 15 minutes, thank you. But the issue is, it's a protocol I'm doing, okay? Before people misunderstand. It's a protocol. The chair or somebody from the committee has to do it. As for answering questions, the team can do it. We are very close to it in Orotando and Frank. But I can take questions you want to ask me, Amy. By the way, they've come to monitor me, those two.
Yeah, thank you, Honorable Karim, for taking us through that brief to the legal unit. Input from you.
Just on this little matter of the request to not proceed with the vote that you received from the commission, I think one must just understand that the commission is concerned that their work might be fruitless. I can only assume that this is not set out in the letter. It's just saying that this is part of our mandate and you've amended. I'm speaking specifically the letter that you yourself received, Jefferson, that you asked me to comment on. So that letter, one can try and understand why are they concerned, because nothing stops the President or Cabinet to come forward with the recommendations that they've accepted or not accepted and present another book. So one wants to say to the Commission, I'm concerned about nothing, you're anxious about this, but it's not as if we're taking anything away from the value of their recommendations. But I just want to reiterate what Chairperson Karim said about the precedent that it set. once a house, and I've said that, you know, once a house has given permission to proceed with the bill, I would think it would be strange for a committee then to say, well, we don't want to. When you've asked to proceed with the bill, it's gone to the other house, that house has referred it to this committee to proceed with it. So if there's a decision to be made, again, the House can make it. They will want to say after the work the committee has done, but we're not going to go with this bill. But as of the 75 bill, nothing can stop the NA from proceeding with the bill as it is. They just need a heightened majority to overrule the proposals from the NCOP. So that's there, but I'm, and I said it to Mr. Karim at the time as well, the precedent that it might set, the reasons we deal with this bill, that to me is alarming. Simply because we are jumping over the separation of powers issue. Yeah. And, which for me makes it worse, is that, not in a negative sense, but they have all the tools there. I mean, the minister can come forward, the cabinet can come forward with new proposals. That's it. So it's not as if this will turn the direction of the PAC into an irreversible direction. So I just wanted to add that. So I would... yeah, although time is short, and GPs probably think it's going to be easier to cut, but just a
little bit later. Thank you. Edgar Jenkins, Honourable Karim.
Yeah, can I just clarify something, right? Because of our procedure, I hope the DA is listening, right? Because we don't become like involved with something. In terms of the protocol or norms, my task as a chair is not to lobby for the bill to be accepted by your house and by your committee, because we are two equally important committees. So when I say that we think it's foolhardy and foolish not to have processed, if I'm talking about the NA side, given the work we did, okay? I'm not speaking for you. You must decide independently what you think, right? In terms of the constitution, the law, and I've been told that this is the way to manage it, so I must make something clear. I don't know how the minutes are reflected. When I spoke about it being foolish and foolhardy, that was the view of the NA committee, right? We can't prescribe to you whether it's foolish and foolhardy, so I'm going to clarify that, okay? The minutes, my brother PNG, people are going to be reading this. So I'm clarifying, when I speak, I'm speaking of us, we decided to go ahead. We decided, based on our own opinions and what Frank Jenkins said, that it's wrong, and we think it'll apply equally to the same law, that a commission can, with due respect to them, tell Parliament. In our case it was even more complex because I remember we'd already voted on the bill in the committee. It's unprecedented. If you have a bill voted in the committee, then you don't vote on it in the House. I've never heard of that, right? So those, but we know we can't prescribe to you now what you do. Secondly, we also cannot, we can only provide, but Frank can provide the legal implications of suspending the processing of this bill on the basis of the commission report. But if you have other reasons that are legitimate and so on, you'll bring it back to us at the 75 bill and we will look at them. That's a separate issue. Thirdly, I have to be fair to Mr. Mania. He did a bill and it was ahead of our bill. The differences you forgot to mention are, one, is that he wanted an open parliamentary process to choose the chairperson of the board. Okay? And he wanted certain other provisions that were, in our view, bordering on legislative overreach. One or two things we tweaked, I think. But thirdly, if I remember correctly, unfortunately, because of the chaos of the last week of bill processing, I haven't had a chance to look at it. But you can see his bill. The other point I think he makes is that the DA as a whole, not just him, in fact, he wasn't in the committee, Mr. Lee, disapproves of any guidelines, not just criteria. They feel that hamstringing is a better term, an asset manager. And we thought we'd come halfway to meet them as well as other pressures on guidelines rather than criteria. So that's the two major areas of difference. But the DA members are here and they look at these folks. I'm sure that's what they'll do if an opposition party is known for what it normally does. They're going to bring this to many of issues here. But those are the areas on how you decide on the chairperson of the board. I think to some extent you guys are slightly tougher. I mean, it's costing some things, I think, some critical agenda on Parliament's role. And thirdly, you don't like the ladder. Okay?
I'm done, Comrade Chair.
Thank you, Honorable Kareem. When you serve on a board, you must be an expert, especially when you work with other people's money. That's very crucial. We belong as politicians to the political office via the pension fund. That trustees, that board must report to us on a quarterly basis. That's how important that board is for a trustees. It's the same rule. Accountability. Transparency. Members, are there questions? Be mindful of the time. Within the 13 minutes, we must be walking back to the NCOP plenary. Honorable Essak, I noted you. Honorable Shibangu? Yes. In that order?
Thank you, Chair. I'll try to be brief. You know, just leading off what you've said, that, you know, when you serve on a board, you know, you have to be accountable and you have to be qualified. And I absolutely agree with you. Now, from my understanding of what Honorable Kareem explained, and I'm not very au fait with the finer details, but if I read what I've been reading a little and what Honorable Kareem said, my understanding is that the Deputy Minister of Finance should then be the chair of the board, if I'm correct. Now, what are the... Right. But what are the circumstances now when you have a Deputy Minister of Finance who is not as qualified, you know, to be the chair of the board? I'm just trying to understand that. You know, so that was just something that came up. And then quickly, Chairperson, I heard Honorable Kareem doing his best trying to explain the Mpati Commission and as to what their thoughts and expressions were on the matter. Now, my question is then, why are we so concerned with putting in this interim bill for the sake of having it there, then calling it an interim bill for the next parliament to come along and perhaps then change the interim bill? And I'm just trying to understand it. Because the Mpati Commission, it seems, based on what Honorable Kareem is saying, seems to be having some issues, and I'm trying to wrap my mind about it. I'll just stop for there. Thank you, Chair.
Bangu?
Thank you, Chair. I'm also going to try to be as short as possible. This Investment Corporation Amendment Bill, according to Chair, it must be as inclusive as possible. Then when are other unions going to be involved in this matter or discussion? Then he also alluded to the fact that the next parliament should decide. I take this to be a baton that must be taken to this, a certain level. And then the next parliament will build on the foundation that we have started. That's my take. Thank you.
A very important matter in this bill is a representation by the workers. Having representatives from those unions. Yes, they've got a voice in the board. And that's crucial. All about Kareem.
Yeah, very quickly. Firstly, what if the DM is not qualified? Then there's a provision that says that in consultation with the cabinet, you can choose any DM in the cabinet, plus the economics. Secondly, I don't think a board chair necessarily has to have the full expertise required. There are four reasons why we said we need the DM. He or she is the custodian of the fiscus from the side of the executive together with the minister, because they define pension. Secondly, you're going to have union representatives. One would imagine they're going to be quite strong, although they'll be experts, they'll be more socially and politically aware. So let's take someone like Professor Eddie Webster. That's the sort of person, you know, equivalent they will find, presumably,
in the financial field. And those people are probably, you know, quite formidable, not just technically, but politically. And so you need somebody there that, you know, actually can manage those processes. But in reverse also, it means that if you have formidable people, that they can manage at the end. So it's both ways. Thirdly, it's been the norm. According to my information, our committee's information, since Jabu Mola came before, when Seva was the minister, it has almost always, if not always, been the DMF finance. The rationale we seem to think is the point we are making explicit. Why else would they have done this? To the concern that, hey, there's a defined pension, and we're in trouble if the money's lost. Fourthly, the board requirements are, in a way, collective. It collectively must have all the expertise and all the skills and all the experience required. It doesn't mean that everybody. One of the options that you might want to think about, even in a report we don't want to amend the board, is there should be maybe a deputy chair of the board. It's not something that one can rule out, you know, who's not a politician. Something you can think about, you know. The next thing is, why are we doing this? I'm using the term interim, though there's no such thing. To calm people's anxiety and to communicate to the impartial commission. So it's really, legally there's no such thing, right? It's in a report that you will say that you see this as an interim bill or a transitional bill, whatever you, and that you look forward, not you, but we can't describe, but the committee looks forward, committee imagines, or I don't know how you word it, we worded it in some way, the new committee, right? So we've done this before. What you might call more transitional interim bills on the eve of a parliamentary term. It's been done many times, where you cannot finish a bill, and then you say, okay, I don't know to what extent it applies to a bill that the trade and industry last week, I think gambling or something, and they didn't finish it, but they focused, because of pressure of time, or for other reasons. It's also pressure of time. If we had Parliament not rising on the 20th and 28th, respectively, we would have waited for the party commission. But on the other hand, you've got a problem. There's a gap now that there's all this anger and frustration by workers and others, and a bill that might or might not come by September, October, after which you'll have public hearings. So you'll probably get your bill probably around December, right? Now what happens between now and then? That's why we say something has to be done. What about all the amount of work we've done? What do we do about the public hearings we have? What do we do about promising people who deliver on the bill? Right? What do we do about the fact the same issues are going to arise? If you don't go ahead with the bill, right? What's going to happen is, COSAT is going to come and make noise. The PSA is going to come and make noise. On the matter of union representation, my brother, if you look at the bill, when you see the bill, you'll see it says in proportion. So any union in the public sector that has a significant weight, through the Public Service Bargaining Council, can appoint. So for example, you can't have the National Union of Mine Workers, because they're not government employees. So the unions that are in the public sector, we do not prescribe there should be two COSATU, Nehawu, and one PSA. No, no, no. We say they must consider it, two from the larger union and one from the smaller union. They can all cluster together and can decide for some while it will be, let's say, PSA, or the second largest. Or after some while it's a smaller union, or they could cluster together and choose the candidates. That's not something we prescribe. So we are inclusive. It says in proportion to the membership in the Public Service Bargaining Council. I'm afraid, Carl, there's nothing more for me to say. What else can I say? You can phone me, right? But we will handle the bill now. It's really the Dolotando bill. It used to be the Matthew Parks bill, but we thought that's too problematic now. It's causing a lot of attention in certain quarters. It's called the Dolotando bill. Okay, can I be excused, please? You can always call me here again. Okay, if you need to.
Honourable members, next Tuesday we will have public hearings. This bill is also included in the public hearings, and then we'll process the bill after the public hearings. So, and we will vote on it on the 19th of March in the morning, and then take it to the plenary scheduled by the leadership of the NCOP. So thank you very much. Thank you for your attendance. Kusatu. This meeting stands adjourned. We will proceed to the... I got this. I got this.